Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. Preaching from 1 Samuel 14, if you want to find that in your Bibles this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 14, we won't get to the entire story today. We will just get to the first portion of it. Quite a long chapter, and really there's two different sides to the story. There's what we're going to talk about today, and then Saul again does some questionable things that we'll look at next week. So, all right. So today, I've got a few little treats for you, at least I think they are. I'm very much a visual learner. And so I love a good picture or an image or even a map. And so today, our story really lends it, I think, to seeing a few things that appear in the text or kind of helps solidify what's going on in the text. So what we're going to do is we're going to read the first five verses. And we'll talk maybe just a little bit here and there. But we're really, after verse 4 and 5, I really want to show you some images to begin with, to kind of help kind of get us into the actual layout of what's going on in our story today. Sound good? All right, yes. All right, here we go. Let's read. One day, all right, let me back up. I said I wasn't going to make a few, we were going to make a few comments, but before we get started, we got to remember where we were at last week. Last week, remember that chapter 13 was a continuation of chapter 12. And remember, last week in chapter, or 2 weeks ago in chapter 12, the Philistines had captured this city named Michmash because Saul was at Michmash and they had won a little bitty victory. And then he had called all the people back to Gilgal, which was down the hill, as we'll see in a minute based off our pictures. And the Philistines had taken Michmash, and Saul was at Gilgal waiting on Samuel to give a sacrifice to the Lord, and then figure out what to do next. Saul was impatient, and he gave the sacrifice anyway, and Samuel came, and it's like, what are you doing? And told Saul, basically, you've been disobedient to the Lord. Your kingdom is not going to last forever. And then Samuel left. And Saul and the rest of his army, they kind of go station near Michmash in this city called Gibba. And that's where our story ends, with the Philistines in Michmash and Israel with Saul and Jonathan in Gibba. And so verse 14 is kind of what happens next. All right, so let's read. One day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, all right, come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side. This is going to be crucial for next week. But he did not tell his father. All right, verse 2. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord. I don't know why it says lording there. That's interesting. Priest of the Lord at Shiloh, or in Shiloh, wearing an ephod, and the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Let's read two more verses. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. One was named Bozez and the other Sinna. Verse 5. The one crag rose on the north in front of Michmash and the other on the south in front of Gibeah. All right, let's stop right there. All right, so today's story, it's really imperative that we understand geography. All right, I don't know if you love geography. I actually like geography. I actually took a geography class in college because it was one of those, you know, for those of you who went to college, you kind of have this, like they gave you this broad outline of here's all the classes you need, and some of them are electives you can kind of pick. And so we needed one class, random class that would fit this one slot. And so we took geography. It was quite interesting. The worst part of the class was, though, was when you had to do, all right, it's this time in this country, and what time is it in this country, but he only gave you coordinates, it would be like, what time is it in this, if it's 9 a.m. in this city and it's latitude, longitude coordinates, what time is it in this city and its latitude and longitude? So you had to open your book and figure out where it was. And the worst one, he did this one on his final exam, and I was like, is one of them was on one side of the international dateline and one was on the other side. Now that was a real stumper right there. And in essence, I think all of us just guessed. 10 o'clock. Sounds good to me. All right, so I love geography. So I've got a couple of maps. All right, because more so than today, in the ancient world, Israel's geography was really played a key factor in the flow of economy, people, and in this case, troops. Now, what you're going to look at is a topographical map of Israel. So we're going to start in the blue, and we're going to go to the kind of orangey color, the University of Texas orange there, all right? So the blue is obviously the Mediterranean Sea, and then that green right there is what's called the coastal plain. This was very flat land, fertile land, and made for ease of travel. In fact, one of the four major travel routes through Israel that connected Egypt and Mesopotamia was on this green area. It's called the Highway of the Sea. Makes sense, right? Because it goes by the sea. Now, as you move in, that yellow is gentle rolling hills. Not big, not high, not gentle rolling hills. It's called the Shephelah, gentle rolling hills. But as you get into that pink color and then in that orange, the terrain drastically changes. And it is what's known as the central hill country. And it is very broken, craggy, hilly, and in cases, mountainous. And so the kind of elevation changes from the sea to that orange is about 3,000 to 3,500 feet in elevation change. For emphasis, if anybody has ever walked or heard of people walking the Appalachian Trail in Georgia starts at Springer Mountain, which is about 3,000-ish feet above sea level. All right, so that's kind of how tall it is, right? So we're not talking about mountain here. We're talking about mountain, or at least for us, mountain. All right. Now, you'll see real quick, it goes from that orange back down into the green, and that's because the landscape drops drastically to the Jordan River Valley, which again is flat because it's via a river. And so what happens, though, is this. The elevation, sea level, zero, goes up to 3,000, but the Jordan River Valley is actually lower, and so then you descend 4,000 feet down into the river valley. And then if you'll notice on the right side of the map, you'll see it again gets very orange very quickly. That far right side is called the Transjordan Plateau, which goes from the Jordan River Valley back up 4,000 feet. So think about this with me. 4,000 feet is not as tall as Brasstown Bald in Georgia, but close. All right? So think about this with me. If you were going, you remember a couple weeks ago, Saul led an army to Jabesh Gilead. Jabesh Gilead is to the right of the Jordan River, so west of the Jordan River on that Jordan River plateau. So if you lived in Joppa on the ocean, and Saul called all of Israel to meet at Jabesh Gilead, if you didn't have ease of access, that meant you walked up 3,000 feet, down 4,000 feet, back up 4,000 feet. Can you say tired? Right? Now, each of these four areas, so the coastal plain has the Highway of the Kings. The central highland or central hills have another called the Road of the Patriarchs, which is kind of that middle dotted line. Can y'all see that? There's a dotted line in the green, and then there's a dotted line in the purple, in the orange. That's the Highway of the Patriarchs, the Road of the Patriarchs. And then on the Transjordan, there's another highway. That's the Highway of the Kings. And then there's a fourth one that follows the Jordan River. That's the Highway of the Jordan, right? Or Highway of the Valley. What you'll notice, though, is that each of these four roads travel north and south, right? That's because east-west travel in Israel is very difficult at this time. Now, it's not difficult today because we have modern technology, we have roads and all that, highways, pavement, you know, bridges and all that. But in this story, movement east-west is very difficult. In fact, it's so difficult that there's only a few places that are easy to move across. One is up in the kind of the top left of the picture near Megiddo. Armageddon is the Valley of Jezreel. The other one that's relevant for our story is at Michmash. Now, there are others, but one of the major ones through the center of the country is at Michmash or at Gibeah. Tucker, go ahead and throw up the second map. This one may be a little bit harder for you to see, but if you'll follow, see the word Judah in bold? See the letter A? Go up the letter A. Go up. So there's letter A. Then there's Hebron and Bethlehem and Jerusalem and Gibeah. That's where our story takes place. And if you'll notice how the shape of the picture is, there's like a ridge that follows all four of those cities. That's because all of those cities are at the apex of this central hill country. And again, if you don't want your troops and economy and food and grain and all your supplies to go like this, you have to follow mountain passes. So why are we spending so much time on this today? Tucker, go to the third slide. Because, and this one's a little bit harder to see, but at the top, kind of star, that's where Michmash is. And at the bottom is where it's kind of, I should have blown it up bigger, is Gibeah. And right in between those two cities is one of the crucial passes that goes from the ocean to the Jordan River Valley. Where does our story take place? At a crucial valley that if the Philistines, here's why we're spending so much time on this morning. Because if the Philistines control the pass, they have, and therefore their 36,000-man army has easy access from the ocean to the river, and the Israelites can't really do anything to stop them. Because they can't get men and materials to the right place at the right time to put up any defense. So if the Philistines control Michmash, they control the pass, which means they control the center, the heart of Israel. And they can go east-west all they want to, and they can flood troops in all the way to Gilgal. Tucker, go back to that first map. Because, Gilgal's not on here. But it's in the green at the river valley. And Michmash is in the pink, or in the orange. And if they control that, they can go basically from the ocean to Gilgal, which is in the heart of Israel, all they want to. And Israel would have to loop in and around to even get close to get their people where they needed them to be. So this is why this story and how the geography plays into the story. So Jonathan says to his armor bearer, that's the guy who like helps him fight in battle. He helps carry his stuff, and they fight as a team. It's like tag team wrestling, basically, in some sense. You know, like WWE style, right? And so he says to his armor bearer, "Hey, let's go over." Now, this isn't for like pleasantries and fighting. He's going over to fight. So let's pick the story up in verse number 6. Jonathan said to the young man, that's his armor bearer, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised." Listen to what he says. "It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." Verse 7. And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul." Verse 8. Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be the sign to us." All right, I'm going to stop right there. So let's see what's going on. So Jonathan and his armor bearer are at Gibeah. They're on one side. The Philistines are at Michmash on the other side of the pass, right? And instead of going through the easy way, through the pass to get to Michmash, Jonathan says, let's do this. We're going to show ourselves to the Philistines. They're going to know that we're there. And the plan is that if, how this is going to work out, if we show ourselves to them and they say, we're going to come down to you. Tucker, go ahead and throw up the next picture. This is a modern day, this is at Gibeah and Michmash. This is the spot that Jonathan and his armor bearer eventually climb up. Gibeah is on the top part of the, or excuse me, Michmash is in, it's not, you can't see it, but it's to the north of the picture, and Gibeah is like to the south, kind of off that bottom left corner, to the southwest of the picture. And Jonathan says, hey, we're going to walk out of our camp, we're going to walk down into this ravine called a wadi, and we're going to show ourselves to the Philistines, who are at an outpost. They're not in Michmash, they're at an outpost right up there in those kind of dark field-looking area. And if they say to us, hey, wait, we'll come to y'all, then we're going to stand in the wadi while they come down to us. But if they say, come up to us, we're going to scale that cliff and we're going to pop up right on top of them. That's the plan. Okay? This is the cliffs that Jonathan and his armor bearer climb up with armor, with Philistines at the top. One author said, possibly throwing arrows, shooting arrows and throwing spears and rocks and everything down on them as they climb up. Okay? So the next part of our story says that's exactly what Jonathan and his armor bearer do. They show themselves to the Philistines. And the Philistines are like, look there! Those Israelites have finally come out of their holes. And when they see Jonathan and his armor bearer, they say, hey, why don't y'all come on up to us? And so Jonathan and his armor bearer scale these cliffs right here, fully loaded with all of their infantry, swords and shields and all of that. And they get up to the top. And what happens after that? Well, let's pick the story up. All right, let's pick the story up. All right. So both of them show themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. See, look, Hebrews coming out of the holes. Next verse, verse 12. And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan, come up to us. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Verse 13. Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet. Why do you have to climb up on his hands and feet? Because he's scaling a cliff. He is rock climbing. And his armor bearer after him. And look what it says. And they, who's they? The Philistines fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed them after him. In other words, Jonathan's the only one with a sword. He's in the front. He is swashing that sword around, cutting people down. And his armor bearer is coming with the shield and the club after him, making sure they're dead. All right? And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor bearer made killed about 20 men. And this is kind of a unit of measurement. Within, as it were, half a furlong's length in an acre of land. That's like half an acre, basically. So basically, they are cutting people down as they're going. Boom, 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 boom. And all till 20 people fall down. All right? And look what happens. And there was panic in the camp. Now, where were Jonathan and his men at? They were at the outskirts, at the garrison, on the outside of town. But everything started happening, and Jonathan and his armor bearer are cutting people down with such efficiency and speed that the majority of the camp that is at Michmash goes into full terror mode. They are in panic. They don't know. They are running around for their lives because they don't know what's going on. And in the midst of that, look what the text says. The garrison and even the raiders trembled. And look what happened. And the earthquake, in other words, an earthquake happened right at the time that Jonathan and his armor bearer are cutting down these Philistines. And the camp is then going into panic. Jonathan and his armor bearer are doing all this. There's an earthquake. And it became a small panic, became a very great panic. All right, so we get the picture of what's going on. Jonathan, his armor bearer, have scaled the cliffs. They have mowed down 20 Philistines in such speed and efficiency that the entire rest of the 35,980 Philistines that are at the camp are in full panic mode. An earthquake happens that throws the thing even more into panic mode. And so the Philistine camp is in chaos, pure chaos. Now, at this time, Saul gets word. So let's see what Saul's doing. Verse 16. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude was dispersing here and there. In other words, they could see across the pass that the Philistines were in chaos. Then Paul said to the people who were with him, count and see who has gone from us. And when they had counted, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. All right, why? Why didn't he know who had gone? Because Jonathan didn't tell him. Now remember that. You're going to need to remember that next week too. So Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here, for the ark of God went at that time with the people of Israel. Verse 19. Now don't run past verse 19. It's going to sound really weird, but we got it. We're going to stop for a minute here because we got to understand what's going on. Now while Saul was talking to the priest, the tumult in the camp of the Philistines increased more and more. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. Now, that sounds really weird, doesn't it? Like, what's he like? Got his hand out? What's he doing? Okay? So here's what's going on in verse 18 and 19. By law, in Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 5, the Lord commanded that anytime Israel was to go into battle, that the priests were to come and they were to bless the Israelite troops as they before they went into battle. Okay? It's in Deuteronomy 20, 1 through 5. It was a command of the Lord that whenever they go into battle, the priests were to come and that before the Israelites went into battle, they were supposed to bless the troops. Okay? So here's the image. Saul is in Gibeah and they see the great panic that is going on in the Philistines. So Saul knows he's got to act, right? We've got to capitalize on what's going on. We only have 600 people. How many do they have? 36,000 minus 20. Okay. Jonathan and his guy done took care of 20 of them. All right. The odds are still like 60 to 1. So Saul is like, they're in chaos. We got to go. But he knows they got to have the blessing of the priest. So he gets the priest Ahijah to come over. But as the priest is coming over and doing his blessing, Saul hears and sees even more that the chaos is growing and growing over in the Israelite camp. And so Saul thinks a golden opportunity is slipping away. So as the priest is in mid-prayer, Saul goes, hey, that's enough, buddy. Stop praying. We got to go. That's what this, in verse 8 and 19, put it back up in verse 19, Tucker. This is what it means when he says, so Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. In other words, the image is that the priest is like this or this, like this, blessing the troops. And Saul's like, hey, bud, you're done. That's good. We got to go. So in other words, Saul cuts the priest off because he's what? Impatient. And thinks he's not going to get in the fight to either win the fight or potentially to get the glory of winning the fight. Right? This is the only time in all of the Old Testament that a king cuts a priest off while he's praying over the troops. This is the only time. And so we add another kink into Saul's armor as king, and we're beginning to wonder, man, how bad is this guy? Because last week, he's totally impatient. He doesn't trust Samuel. He doesn't obey the word of the Lord. And this week, he cuts the guy off mid-prayer because he's got to hurry up to get in the battle. Right? So again, we're like, I don't know about this Saul guy. All right, so let's continue. Verse number 20. Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and went into battle. So they make it into the battle. And behold, every Philistine's sword was against his fellow, and there was great confusion. Verse 21. All right. Now, the Hebrews. Now look. Listen to this verse. Now, the Hebrews who had been with the Philistines, what would we call those? Traitors. Traitors. There were Hebrews who were actually fighting with the Philistines at this time. So those guys, when they saw the chaos, they turned against the Philistines and started fighting with Paul. So the Hebrew traitors traded on the Philistines after being traitors on their own country. It's confusing, but anyway. So as Saul joins the battle, these Hebrews who had been with the Philistines start fighting with Saul, and they push the Philistines even more. Verse 22. Then the Israelites who had hidden in the caves and ran away from last week, they joined the battle as well, and Saul and his men keep pushing them even further, and the story ends in verse number 23 with these words. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed beyond Beth Aven, which is on the outskirts of the hill country. And we'll read next week, I believe it's in verse 31, that they completely pushed this massive Philistine army all the way out of the central hill country region of Israel, basically meaning the Israelites now have control of the entire center of the country. Those passes that control east-west, the Philistines no longer have access to those, and Israel controls them. So they've mitigated, or at least for the moment, this threat. But the last verse is the crucial part. So the Lord saved Israel that day. So we looked at geography, we looked at battle tactics, we've looked at Saul and Jonathan's actions, we've looked at Saul's actions. So if we were to ask this question in the remaining moments that we have today, what is the one thing or two things that we need to get out of this story? Like, what is the main idea? Well, the number one main idea is this verse right here. Right? It doesn't say, Saul, after cutting the priest off from his prayer, saved Israel that day, does it? No. It doesn't even say, and Jonathan saved Israel that day. Although we're going to talk about him more in a minute. What does it say? The Lord saved Israel that day. Now, clearly, the Lord uses the actions of people. Again, we're going to talk about that more in a minute. But the key point of this story is that the Lord is the one who caught. Did the Israelites cause the earthquake? No. Did the Israelites cause the great panic? No. I mean, think about it. They got 36,000 people, right? Only two people defeat 20. You got 36,980 left. Like, why would you go into a great panic over two guys defeating 20? That doesn't make sense, does it? From logical, mathematical, strategic terms, it doesn't make any sense. But who is the one who throws the people into panic? The Lord does. Just like He did the Ammonites several stories ago at Jabesh-Gilead. The Israelites didn't throw them into great panic. The Lord threw them into great panic. And He does so again to here. He does so again in this story as well. And so it is the Lord who works and maneuvers using people to save Israel that day. However, and also, it's probably a better way to say it, we cannot move out of this story without noticing Jonathan's heroic actions. Because it is through Jonathan's actions that God saves Israel, right? And so if we wanted to consolidate these two ideas into one, it would be this. The Lord saved Israel that day through the actions of Jonathan. Like, it is Jonathan is the impetus for all that the Lord does. Yes, Saul comes in the end with the rest of the, 598 people, soldiers that are with him, right? But if Jonathan doesn't take some heroic actions, some unprecedented actions, I mean, Tucker, throw the cliffs back up there. I mean, can you imagine climbing and scaling the cliffs? This right here? I mean, you have a sword. You don't even have the shield. The buddy behind you has the shield. And your enemy is at the top, and you've got to climb hand and foot up this to get up to maybe win the battle. Right? But Jonathan, without fear, all of this scales these cliffs. Right? So if we were to ask ourselves today, what can we learn from Jonathan's actions? Well, they're unorthodox. They obviously caught the enemy by surprise, and they worked. But more than that, the question I had this week is, what did it take inside of Jonathan to cause him to do what he did. All right? What inside of him caused him to do what he did? And I think there's two things, and I want to give you a third one as well. First, it took great courage. Great courage. Jonathan could have looked at the situation. They've got 600 people. Philistines have 36,000. He could have looked at these cliffs and thought, I'm only one person. What can I do? Right? He could have said, what difference can I make? How could I legitimately affect this battle? I'm just one guy. Excuse me. I got my armor bearer. We're just two people. How can we change anything about this battle? He could have said that. And nobody would have faulted him, right? It's two against 36,000. Highly unlikely, right? How is one guy and his armor bearer, who doesn't even have, we don't even know the guy's name. He's unnamed in the story, right? How are they going to affect the battle? We would look at that and say, probably not. It'd be best probably, I mean, you are the son of the king, so if something happens to the king, you're the next guy. Probably best if you stay back. But what does Jonathan have? Great courage. Here's the amazing thing about courage. Courage does not mean that there's an absence in the fear of fear in the one who is courageous. Right? Do you think Jonathan and his armor bearer were fearful as they climbed up? I bet they were. And rightfully so. Not only are they scaling this, they've got Philistines at the top potentially shooting arrows and throwing rocks. And then if not, waiting for them when they get up there. Right? Courage is not the absence of fear. Rather, courage is looking at a situation as overwhelming as it may be and not quitting, but instead looking for a way through it, even if it means going one solitary step at a time. That's what courage is. Courage is not the absence of fear. It is pressing on in the midst of fear. Right? Jonathan had great courage. Here's the other thing. Jonathan had supreme trust in God. I love what Jonathan said to his armor bearer. He says, it may be that the Lord will work for us. For nothing can hinder the work of the Lord. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few. Jonathan wasn't sure his idea was going to work at all. Do you hear the contingency in his quote to the armor bearer? It may be that the Lord will work. But here's what Jonathan had absolute trust in. If God is in this, ain't nobody stopping the Lord from doing what he wants to do. So in other words, Jonathan knows that if the Lord is with them in this, they will be successful. So what does Jonathan have inside of him? He trusts supremely in the Lord. So he's got great courage, not fearlessness, courage through the midst of fear, and great trust in the Lord. And so him and his armor bearer scale the cliffs, and they start the battle that Israel is victorious in, that the Lord, how the Lord saves Israel through the initial work of Jonathan and his armor bearer. But here's the other thing, and this isn't inside Jonathan, this is with Jonathan. He has a trusted friend. That phrase that the armor bearer says, he's only got one phrase, right? Do all that is in you, the Lord be with you. And that phrase, he says, I am with you, heart and soul. One commentator said that it's better to translate that as, I am in your heart. Think about this. What if Jonathan went to his armor bearer and said, hey man, I got this plan. Let's do this. And his armor bearer went, that's terrible. What if his armor bearer was like, I don't know about this one, bud. I mean, I've been with you through a lot of things, but this might be dumb. What if his armor bearer would have been like, maybe we should go talk to the king. What if his armor bearer would have shed any doubt on Jonathan's plan? Story might be completely different. Could be. Now, we don't know because that's not what happened. But his armor bearer, his trusted friend,
says, man, I am in your heart on this one. Where you go, I go. See, there's a lot of times in life where we just need a trusted friend by our side to say, hey, bud, you got this. I am with you 100%. And here's the other side of the coin. Sometimes we need to be that person for our friends. See, sometimes our friends are right on the precipice of doing great things, and all they need is just you or I to come along and say, hey, I am with you on this. I believe in you. I am behind you 100%. You, God can do this through you. I am with you. So sometimes we're Jonathan in the story, right? Courage, great ideas, trust in God, and we just need somebody to partner alongside and say, hey, you got this. And sometimes we're the unnamed armor bearer in the story, where our friend is like, hey, man, I got courage in this, trust in the Lord, do this, and they just need us to come alongside of them and say, hey, you got this. I'm with you, heart and soul. I'm in your heart on doing this. The Lord can do this through you, right? And so as we look at how does this story apply to us, it's those three things. Courage. There's going to be times in life where we're fearful and we want to cash it in and give up. But let's learn from Jonathan and say, let's have great courage. We can be fearful and keep pressing on, even if it's one step at a time. And in the midst of that great courage, let's trust in the Lord and remember, hey, He might be working on our behalf. And if God is with us, as the New Testament says, who can be against us? Right? And then sometimes we just need a friend to come along, and even better, because you know we can't control if other people come alongside of us, but we sure can control us being that friend to people who need it the most in their greatest time of need. All right? And so I think that's where our story applies today. So we end with the Lord saving Israel. Now we're going to pick up the story next week and finish out chapter 14, where Saul makes another boneheaded mistake. Right? But today, let's walk out encouraged that we can be courageous, that we can trust in the Lord, and that we can be a friend like the armor bearer was for Jonathan.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.